Welcome to the User Defenders Podcast, where we interview successful UX designers who fight for the user in order to inspire and equip you to do the same. And now, here's your host, Jason Ogle.
Greetings, User Defenders. Welcome to Episode 2. I'm your host, Jason Ogle, and today I'm thrilled to bring you another inspiring interview, this time with prototyping innovator Josh Tucker. Josh and I both live on farms, so our internet connections are not ideal. There may be a couple of places in the audio that are a little jumpy, but you can still hear everything. I don't think it takes away at all from the great interview that I had with Josh and the value that he brings to this show. So without further ado, let's jump right into it. Josh Tucker is an insatiably curious prototyping innovator. He's a master of one of my favorite prototyping tools, Framer.js, and is constantly experimenting with and documenting super creative out-of-the-box gestures and innovative UI solutions for users. He's a very generous knowledge contributor to our great community, and in the time I've gotten to know him, just one heck of a smart, friendly, cool, and enthusiastic guy. So, Josh, welcome. I'm super excited to have you on the show today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm really, really appreciate it. I'm really excited to chat with you more about the world of user defenders and, of course, UX.
Sweet. Well, what I like to do is I like to start the show. You know, I'm kind of taking kind of a theme here with the superhero thing. I think it makes a lot of sense, though, because, you know, there's a lot of really super talented, smart folks like yourself that are doing outstanding work. And, you know, for you, I don't think a lot of folks know you personally, but not even just personally, but the work you're doing. I think that a lot of more people need to see the work that you're doing. So that's one of the reasons I'm so excited to have you here on the show.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah, I would hope that I'm not the only one doing it. I think that of all the people that I look up to, like, I've got a long way to go, but any opportunity that I have to equip people with the tools and the knowledge to be successful and to go out and, as you say, fight for our users, then yes. I'm absolutely ready to go.
I love it. All right. Well, let's start out with your secret identity. Every superhero has one, right?
Yes.
So, you know, this is an area where we just talk about your personal life. I'd love to get to know you more, just for selfish reasons, but I think also our listeners would love to kind of do a little deep dive into your life. What's your life like, you know, when you're not working, when you're not coming up with these innovative solutions?
Sure. So I guess I'll start off with where I live. So I live in a very small town in Northern California. And with that comes a lot of opportunities to do things outside. So when I'm not working, I really enjoy being in the outdoors, camping, hiking, climbing, swimming, all that really fun stuff. I also really love serving people. I love helping people do things. And so I volunteer at my church, and I've actually worked at a church before that. And so when I'm not working, any opportunity to do that is just amazing. I live on a pseudo farm. My family owns a bunch of animals like goats, pigs, chickens, that kind of stuff. So when I'm not working, sometimes they want my attention, whether they want to be fed or they want to be fed, because that's pretty much the only reason why they care that I exist.
I hear you.
But I guess on a general note, I'm just a really flexible person. I love people. I love getting to know people. I love learning about people. And so any opportunities that I have outside of what I do to get to know people better and to really experience new things, that's what I really crave and look for.
I love it. I totally identify with you about the farm life. I'm out here in Colorado, out in the prairie, man. And it's funny because before we started recording today, I was hearing some pecking on the other side of my wall here. We have 20 chickens, and
oh, wow.
The coop is right on the other side of this wall where I record. And I've yet to soundproof, but that's going to be, that's on the roadmap. Anyway, identify with you there. That's great. I love your heart for people and for serving others. That's a great, great start.
Thank you.
Tell us your starting out story, Josh. What inspired you to pursue UX design as a career?
That is an excellent question. So I have always been someone that really doesn't like status quo. Like, I'm always searching for that opportunity to do something differently or better. And when I was in high school, that was kind of when the craze of the iPhone and smartphones came out. And I remember I got my first smartphone, and like many things that I've gotten in my life, for good and for bad, I always go to it and use it and be like, this is weird. Why is it this way? Why can't it be this way? Or why does it have to do this? And why can't it do that? And so once I realized that, you know, this, I guess in this case, iOS had such an amazing opportunity to be a part of like the next generation of software and tools and products, you know, I really wanted to hop on and do that. And so, of course, at the time, there were kind of two different avenues you could choose. You could go to the design route or the engineering route or the development route. And I first started in development, actually. But at the time, it didn't grasp me. I don't know why. It just, I wasn't enjoying it. I didn't understand it. And so I chose design out of kind of like, well, this one doesn't work, but the other one might work. And that's what I really found super exciting, is that the design that I like to do is starting from the, you know, the ground up, you know, kind of building the framework and trying to encapsulate what the issue is and then providing a solution for it. And so my journey in UX began with like my first smartphone. Like, I want to make it better. And that's kind of how it projected me to where I am now.
A true innovator, looking at the problems and getting to know the problem so well that you come up with solutions and you just can't wait to dive in and tackle that. And that's great. So if you weren't doing this for a living, what would be your second career choice and why?
Great question also. So a part of my life story as well, in regards to my design work, is that when I was in high school too, I really, really wanted to pursue business as a career. And actually, even though I practice design now for a profession, I actually have a business degree. And that's what I went to school for. I continued to practice, learn design while I was in business school. So if I had a second choice, I think it would definitely be in the line of business or entrepreneurship. And I would say that not in, you know, the strictest sense, like put on a tie and suit and like go to work and like crunch numbers and like talk about synergy, right? but be in a place of business where I could build things that mattered to people, that made people's lives better and helped them accomplish what they want to accomplish. And I think looking back, having that business background has actually been a huge thing for me as a designer too, because the principles of an entrepreneur, which is what my specificity is in, aligned very much with how UX designers think about really creating something that matters to people and that fits what they need it for, and then continuing to craft it in a way that better serves them over time.
I love that perspective, because, you know, a lot of designers, you know, we can be really, really great at seeing something visual and creating something that looks great. However, there's also another side of fighting for the user that, you know, is also business related. And we also, I mean, unless we have the privilege of being on our own and doing our own thing and maybe being more of an artist, we're actually trying to solve a business problem as well. So I think it's great to have both perspectives. And I think that just makes your work that much better, because you're not only fighting for the user, but you're also trying to accomplish and achieve a business goal. So I think that's a really great perspective.
Absolutely. And I think business too, at least what I learned in school, very much focuses on the lean approach strategy. I think that's really key in business today, is the lean approach to things. And I think that is an important aspect of design too. Really just getting that lean piece of software or whatever that you're putting together out there so that you can begin to validate the decisions that you made against what people actually do and how they respond and what they think of what you're doing as well. And that was really important for me too, because on the one side of it, I really enjoy like building things and getting them out there so people can use them. But I also am really driven to make it like very perfect and intricate and like so detailed that sometimes I'll just get sucked in and realize I accomplished really nothing because I was so focused on something that really doesn't matter at the point in time that I'm doing it.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're kind of like mad scientists, aren't we, in a lot of ways?
Oh, definitely. I love that part of it, just being completely nuts. And but I think like a mad scientist too, is you get to test it on people. You're not really mad if you are actually attempting to learn something from your experiments versus being in your lab and like blowing stuff up.
That's true. We're glad scientists. How about that?
Yeah, that's a good word.
Because when we authenticate our work, it makes us glad. I think we were mad, like you said, when we don't experiment and when we don't try it and when we don't validate it. That's what makes us
exactly.
mad. Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's tweetable.
Good. Writing it down.
I'm writing that down. I'm tweeting that. Hashtag glad scientist.
Oh, that's so good.
All right. So let's see. So, who's been your biggest inspiration in your work and why?
You know, I'm going to be completely honest with you. I really don't have a singular person. Let me explain.
That's fair.
So I am someone that learns out of necessity, I guess.
Mm.
You know, let's use an example. So when it comes to reading books, I am not that gentleman that sits by the fire and says, this is a scintillating novel. Right. I read a book because I need to fix a doorknob on my bedroom and I need to figure out how to fix this stupid doorknob. Right.
Right.
And in the same way with UX, when I'm learning things and wanting to improve on things, I find whichever sources help me accomplish that goal. And so I would say that, you know, many of the UX designers and designers that you might know in the community, of course, like Louis Mantilla or people from Dropbox or Google, or really, quite frankly, anybody that you can think of that you look up to, I've probably attributed my success to what they wrote and what they have said, and how maybe if I've met them in real life, how they've inspired me that way. And so in terms of, a singular person, if I had to pick one, I suppose, and this is an obvious one, of course, is Steve Jobs. And I think for me, the reason for that is because he just doesn't or didn't accept status quo.
Mm.
And he didn't settle for mediocrity. You know, he wanted things to be excellent at the expense of maybe a lot of people's time and things like that. But people who worked for him, even though people, you know, they might say he's crazy and nuts, but they love him and want to be a part of what he does because he's so inspirational when it comes to what you can accomplish if you buckle yourself down and really make the users first and you put their needs and wants at the forefront and you don't settle for anything less.
Mm. If the users have a problem, it's our problem.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think the trickiest thing too is remembering, and this can be difficult in terms of maybe skewing your opinion about, like in the case of user testing, but we are also users too, right? As designers, right? We can't discount that at all. And I think that's such an important characteristic when it comes to building the next big thing or the next thing or even iterating on what already exists, is that we're users too, but we have to be out there like being normal human beings, because people don't reveal themselves to us when we have a name tag and we're all dressed up. We're undercover spies, like trying to figure out the information we need to know without really alluding to it, so that we can really get the raw information we need to make things great.
Absolutely. I want to pull one nugget out from the beginning of this conversation too, of this question. You know, you said that, you know, you'll read something when you need to, and not just because you may have to later. I think there's so much value in that, user defenders, to pull from, because, and this has been a revolution in my life, is just in time learning versus just in case learning. So that'll save a ton of time. Learn something when you need to. Don't learn something because you may need to know it later. That's been a huge time saver for me. I just want to ask you another question here about about the secret identity part of you. What's one habit you believe contributes to your success?
I think for me, I really love kind of setting up people for success. So when I'm working with other people or teams, I really value other people's input and insight, and I'm not one to have to lead or be the one that's spearheading things. And so I really see things very strategically and futuristic. And so as a result, I recognize people and where they are and how they contribute, and I want them to be involved. And so I find myself learning so much by actually not taking the helm on things and just sitting back and evaluating what's going on, because other people have the chance to inspire, to lead, to build, to create.
Mm. I can validate that, because you have been just such a great help, an instrumental help out there, especially in the Framer community. You know, and just your excitement, your passion, you know, for helping others solve problems has just been great. So I appreciate you for that. Can you tell us the one thing you're working on that you're most excited about right now?
Sure. So currently I'm working freelance. So I have the flexibility to do a lot of interesting stuff. So I'm currently working with Spotify on some of the new things that they're doing in relation to onboarding, as well as a deeper immersive now playing experience.
Wow. That's exciting, man.
Yeah, no, it's super fun. And to your point earlier about learning out of necessity, that's been the most fun part, is that there's just been some really tricky stuff to put together. Because in this instance, you know, when you're building prototypes that are, quote, a little bit more static, it's a little easier in terms of efficiency and things like that to get them running. But some of the prototypes I'm working on include playing music and pausing music and syncing music, and just super tricky. And it's just been great, because I've had to read all this crazy documentation and stuff to make this work. And it's just so empowering when you're done and you're like, yeah, I did it.
Wow. So you're working with Spotify on this project.
Mm-hmm. So
nice.
It's been fun, but tricky as well, in the sense that Spotify's based in Sweden. And the first team I worked with is in New York, but my new team I'm working with now is in Sweden. So that's a 9-hour time difference. So, you know, our little debacle earlier about our time zones is nothing compared to 9 hours away.
I think that's so exciting about your opportunity with Spotify. What a great thing. I'm a subscriber. I love the app. I love the service and the innovations. You're a great fit for that. So,
well, thank you. Absolutely. I really enjoy Spotify too. So that's a huge bonus that I actually love what I'm doing.
That is awesome. So let's get into your transformation. You know, every superhero must go through some sort of transformation where they realize the powers they have and then harness those powers for the good, for the greater good. So let's get into this section. What's your design superpower, Josh?
So you kind of alluded to it earlier, but I definitely think that like prototyping is a huge design superpower for me. Just being able to like take an idea and be able to throw it into something really quickly to validate, I think that is absolutely like a strong point of mine.
Absolutely. That is a great answer. I wish I had more of that superpower. I'm working on it. I mean, absolutely. In this day and age, you know, and as Daniel said in our interview last time, he said, you know, what people call prototyping now is really going to be design, you know, in the near future, if not already now. So great, great. I love that answer. And I wish I had that superpower more, but you know, we can achieve it.
Like any superhero. Well, actually, I take that back, because superheroes sometimes, of course, they have them through miraculous, you know, transformations. But prototyping is definitely a superpower that you can build and then you can kind of nurture, which is cool.
Yes. Great encouragement to our listeners who are probably wanting to be, as I, you know, at that place, you know, where we can just get in there, dive in, and just let our ideas come to life and let people put it in people's hands. I think that's where the power is.
Definitely.
What's your design kryptonite?
Oh, man. Oh, there's so many. I think, because this is kind of sad. I'm going to kind of, you know, give you an insight on my knowledge of superheroes is like when you, because you posed this question beforehand, thankfully, and I know what kryptonite is, but I was like, well, what does it actually do? You know, is it like kill me? Does it like put me in a coma? Does it like make me like an evil person and like mind control me? So it looks like, you know, it kind of like brings you down, kind of, you know, it's a poison, if you will, that kind of starts to eat at you away. And I think for me, that kryptonite is definitely, right now anyway, the visual side of the design. Of course, I practice it and I do it, but that just really eats me away sometimes because, as I mentioned earlier, I really want things to be right and correct. And so I'll be sitting there and, you know, trying to fix a little details like, well, is this color the right color, or is this the right font, or is it the right font spacing and things like that. And you get sucked into it. And then you realize hours later that like you could have just built like a very lean thing to work on and then do all that stuff later. But now I'm like behind because I'm still focused on stupid font or something.
Right. Right. Definitely understand that. This one's kind of fun. What would your UX design superhero name be?
Oh yeah, this is, I nailed this one. I've been thinking about this one.
Okay. Oh good.
So I guess about a year ago, I don't know if it was like popular, but I started seeing people put on their profiles or the LinkedIn profiles. They used to put things like I'm a ninjineer or something. So they'd be like a software engineer and put an engineer, right?
Right.
And I was like, that's sweet, but there's really nothing you can do with like designer, like ninja designer or something, you know, right? Or
yeah,
ninja experience, or like it doesn't work, right? But one I came up with that I think best fits me and like where I want to go is the interaction ear.
Ooh.
So someone who practices interaction design, loves interaction design, but is someone that can build and craft that experience too. So interaction ear.
That is good. Hashtag interaction ear.
It's actually in my profile on Twitter. So I actually put it in there. So
love it. Love it. Well, you know, what's interesting, I'm partnering with a good friend of mine. He's an artist and he does storyboards for Hollywood. He's worked on shows like Heroes and just plenty of other things on House. And anyway, super talented guy. And he's helping me out with making little caricatures of awesome. My guests. So anyway, that's kind of part of that segment there. I want to give him a shout out though. His name is Caesar Lemus. I'll mention his Twitter at the end. I can't think of it right now. Anyway, awesome. Yeah, so that's fun. Great. Love that answer.
Divulge a little bit. I'm just curious, how is he building, or how is he crafting these profiles of us, these caricatures? Because I would say that if he's going to use my online persona, like he's going to be very confused. I try to be professional, but I'm just like this silly, goofy guy that every once in a while has his tongue sticking out on his profile picture. It's just, so
yeah. Well, you know, he's just so talented, and you know, he draws characters in his sleep, basically, you know. So, and he understands tech too. So that's a real kind of winning awesome. Sort of attribute to this. So he did one for Daniel already, and I'm working with him right now. It's really cool. So I can't wait to see what he does for you. Do you have a story of something really crazy or super awkward that happened during user testing?
So I wouldn't say it's like awkward, but very, very crazy. So when I was building my first application when I was in high school, we were trying to find beta testers and trying to figure out how we were going to facilitate that and get people's feedback and things like that. And in the process of that, I actually stumbled upon a cousin that's like related to me online that I never knew was online. And I come from a very large family. So my grandfather's from India and has many, many, you know, cousins and uncles, and everyone's an auntie and uncle, a cousin, right? And so the fact that you could meet someone like that, so obscure, like just out of random, was just so funny. So I remember getting a contact from said person and then realized like, wait a minute, this is my cousin. Like, whoa.
What are the odds, right?
I know. Yeah, it was really crazy. And it's weird too, because not only was it someone that was just like testing like a product, but that person was very involved in the community that I was involved in. I just never saw it. And it was just really weird.
That is wild.
Yeah.
How did they do with your app, by the way?
Oh, no, they did great. They were really helpful too. And
they weren't biased, actually, right?
Yeah, no, yeah, no. I think everyone in that situation did a really, really great job, and like he's very honest too, which I really respect for as well. And it's cool actually. I haven't seen him in a long time, but we have a big Indian wedding this week, so I will see him. So I'm really excited.
All right. That is great, man. Great story. One of my favorite lines from Tron is, and actually what it kind of inspired this podcast was when he said, "I fight for the users." How do you fight for your users, Josh?
Great question. So I guess in my transformation, like philosophy wise, I'm starting to realize more and more that, you know, a lot of the solutions and problem solvers of today are hidden, you know, in things that we've disregarded. Mm-hmm. So a lot of my work you may have seen, it relates to a lot of gestures. And the premise behind why I pursued those in the first place was because, you know, there was something that I was trying to build in terms of like a feature, and I really wanted it to be X, Y, and Z. You know, I wanted it to be intuitive. I wanted it to be easy to access, you know, et cetera. And I evaluated all these different solutions and then realized that really an opportunity to make something great was masked in what we already like know to exist. So in the case of some of my projects, it was really related alongside of drag gestures. So in one of the kind of studies I did, I argued that people understood the differences between, say, a swipe and a drag gesture. And if that's the case, then you can begin to create experiences that are more dynamic, because if people know what to do, then we're understanding their behavior and then able to present them things accordingly. So I fight for my users in the sense that I really want to know them from a personal like level and to begin to understand like their mannerisms and their characteristics and their behaviors on the most granular level, because once you can kind of connect the dots there, then the power of the interface just skyrockets, because you're leveraging every minute thing that a person can do and or what they understand or what they're able to accomplish just in their own interaction with what you built.
That's great. And, you know, I just encourage you listeners, check out Josh's work. At the end, we'll give him an opportunity to tell you how to find his work and to connect with him. Highly recommend go check out the experiments that he's conducted and some of the things, the innovations that he's come up with, especially as it relates to gestures. Incredible stuff. I was blown away. I think that one of the first things you shared with us was your arc, your swipe arc, to determine whether they're left-handed or right-handed. It's something like that. It seems so simple and obvious, but nobody had thought about doing something like that until you got that out there. And I was looking at that before our interview, and I see that even Luke Robleski shared that. And, you know, so that's just great stuff. And also I came across your Apple Watch undo gesture, or, you know, were you using the hardware on there for that? Can you tell us about that real quick?
Yeah, sure. So it was just kind of an interesting experiment, but, this is kind of early on, and maybe it's better. I updated to the recent watch beta, or excuse me, watch release, and it seems to be okay. But at the time, when you're dictating on the Apple Watch, things were just kind of slow. And every once in a while, you know, because she's not perfect, or he or whoever your voice is, you know, something would mess up. And unfortunately, you really can't undo a dictation on an Apple Watch like you can't say on an iPhone. So if you were like, you know, blah, 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 and it totally screwed it up, you basically spent all that time explaining it and then waiting for it to load and then realizing it was wrong and then having to cancel it and start all over. And so the force touch to undo was just like one mechanism I thought of that would be neat to be able to say like, oh, I'm recognizing I'm screwing up. Like, I just want to undo a few words and then start over.
Yes. I love it. I wish my phone did that and my tablet.
So. Maybe it does. I don't know. I don't have a 6S yet, but maybe it does. Like,
yeah. Well, I love it, man. Keep it up. You know, keep inspiring and keep creating. How do you measure success?
So for me, my huge win is whether the people that are using what I build, whether it adequately help them accomplish what they wanted to do. Was it an efficient way to get what they want to do? Because I'm really focused around like efficiency and like productivity. Like, that's my angle on design. Is I think that technology so often such a bother that it actually hinders you from being able to complete what you're trying to do, or it doesn't release you to just live your life. You know, you're so sucked into the technology and like making sure that it's there for you when you need it, instead of actually doing the things you should be doing. And so measurements of success are whether the person found it to be efficient, whether they like the success story is like, I was able to accomplish this in this time, or this made it easier for me because X, Y, and Z. Like, that's one aspect of success. And then also something that is like delightful to them, something that, you know, regardless of like how stringent of a product it is, like it's, you know, productivity product or like a fun app or something like that, but something that like it excited them that they accomplished what they wanted to do, or excited them that they got to do what they did.
That is great. I love it. You know, I think that the delight factor is one that can get lost. The importance of that can get lost so often in projects, especially when we're building something for someone else. It's kind of like, okay, we don't have time. We don't have budget. Let's just get something that works, you know, but really it's the icing on the cake, you know? I mean, and I loved Aaron Walter's book, Designing for Emotion. Have you read that book?
Yeah, it's a great book.
So great. It totally reinforces that whole idea of the importance of delight. So I love that you said that.
Yeah.
This is the last of this section. This is kind of an interesting one and maybe even a challenging question, but what does the future of UX look like to you?
That is definitely a toughie. I think my initial response would be that user experience will be, maybe not this harsh in terms of the scale, but it's going to be defined by the people, by the users, right? Like things are going to be so dynamic and so connected to who you are as a person that the experience that people have with what you've created is solely their own. In the sense that like today you build an application inside of a box, if you will, and they're kind of confined in that regard, and you kind of lead them through things and they have some flexibility. It's the premise of like an open world, but you like hit the edge of the map, you know, because it's like not technically open world, right?
Yeah.
I think user experience is going to be like building the tools so that whatever people are trying to do, like they're crafting how they want to do it.
Oh, interesting. That makes a lot of sense because, you know, they're users before they're consumers. You know, somebody told me that when I announced that I was going to be doing this, they said, you know, I love the idea because really they're users first and then consumers second. So
no, absolutely. Yeah. That's totally true.
So let's wrap up with superpowers. This is just a segment of, you know, kind of bringing everything home and giving something to our listeners to that they can, you know, kind of pursue in their time and think about and grab hold of to help further their career. What's your most invincible UX resource or tool you can recommend to our listeners?
Well, I would say I use two. The first one is definitely Sketch. And I say that because, I mean, that's a core tool for most people, but Sketch is just so aligned with design in the first place that it's amazing that finally we have this design tool that was built for designers. You know, it wasn't like this Photoshop or Illustrator that, you know, does like a million things and design is one of them. Like Sketch is design. I think that's a really great thing. And then also, for me, one of my most invincible resources is definitely, as you mentioned earlier, Framer.js. And yes. I know there's a lot of like tricky, you know, like use case issues and like whether it's easy to learn or not. And is it better than Principle? Is it better than Envision? And like all this other stuff. But I would say to anyone that asks me why I chose Framer is because I'm not confined to what the tool can do for me. In the case of a form or in Principle, while they are so great and awesome for what they are able to do, Framer is built on the web. And if Framer doesn't support it, I will find a library that does and I can use it.
Awesome.
And I'm not limited to like the things that the actual language is able to accomplish. I'm limited to what the web can offer. And that's pretty big.
Absolutely. And, you know, that is one of the most impressive things to me about Framer, is the possibilities. It's really limited to your imagination and your skill set. You know, in that second part, I think that's what I struggle with, and maybe a lot of our listeners struggle with a lot, is, you know, gaining that skill set and really getting to know JavaScript and CoffeeScript. And do you have, like, this is just kind of impromptu question, but do you have input for somebody like me and listeners who really wish they could just jump in and start building some amazing, you know, micro interactions and things in Framer? Or just how do people really start grabbing hold that is, it is possible?
I mentioned earlier that I tried the development route and I switched, quote, I switched to design as a result of not being able to do development. And I would say that in the case of Framer anyway, and if you're going to evaluate them against other potential tools, I would look at the opportunities that you have with each tool and what it translates in terms of your growth as a designer or wherever you want to go. Mm-hmm. So for someone that is really wishing they could jump in, like, it was not that easy for me either. In fact, when Framer first started out, I did it and I backed out because it was, quote, too difficult. And then I came back in and things got better because I just chose not to let down. Like, I didn't want to let whatever I was doing not be done, not be, you know, built or whatever. The reason why I chose Framer in the first place, to that question, is because you feel so powerful when you are able to accomplish what you build, but also it translates into your perspective as a designer and how you relate to your engineers, and also is a gateway to potentially building your things on your own. I love the idea of being involved as much as possible in what I do. And so the idea that one day I could be involved in actually building it, you know, like building what I prototype, like, that is exciting to me. And so if you're someone that really enjoys being involved in the process wherever possible, like, I would argue that the time invested in learning something like Framer is worth it, because it's merely a step in refining how you think and how you work and how you build, and gives you a different perspective on what you do, and really, in my opinion, gives you an edge when it comes to actually making things reality.
Nice. That's great encouragement. If you could recommend one book to our listeners, what would it be and why?
So we have this conversation about book reading, but yep. The book that I'm currently reading right now that I haven't finished yet, but I solely recommend, it's so incredible, is The Illusion of Life. Oh. It's a Disney animation book, and it was written by two gentlemen that are part of the original nine men that were Disney's core animators when Walt Disney began, when he started working on Disney animation. And I know that sounds silly because, you know, animation, you could divulge on its own sector of design. But I think that this resource is so unique because it's not strictly UX, it's reality. And I think that what you can pull from their insight being animators is so relevant and being a user experience designer. And if you allow me, I'd like to read a snippet of it. I don't want this to be story time with Josh, but I think if there's anything I'm going to sell you on to read this book, like, this snippet is going to like totally draw you in.
Please do.
Okay. So I'll try to paraphrase a little bit because it's a little bit long, but this is the very beginning of the book. No, this is not like, you know, midway in. This hooks you at the very beginning.
Nice.
So this part of the book, this part of the page, talks about the difference between like cartoons and actors, like real life actors. And so it begins by saying that a live actor has, you know, an advantage against cartoons because they can interrelate with other people in the cast. So when you're in a live action picture, you know, there's two actors that work together and there's that chemistry that creates that charisma, that special excitement, that illicit responses from the audience. And the actors will each project a unique energy simply because they are real people. But by contrast, in animation, or I should say user experience, we start with a blank piece of paper. Out of nowhere, we have to come up with characters that are real, that live, that interrelate. We have to work up the chemistry between them, if any exist, find ways to create counterpart of charisma, have the characters move in a believable manner, and do it all with mere pencil drawings or your sketch drawings or Photoshop drawings. That is enough challenge for anybody. Now, these problems would seem to create considerable difficulties for achieving the communication claimed for animation. How can it work so wonderfully? It does it in a very simple way through what we call audience involvement. In our own lives, we find that as we get to know people, we share their experiences, we sympathize, we empathize, we enjoy. If we love them, we become deeply concerned about their welfare. We become involved in their lives. Now, to skip forward a little bit, it kind of jumps into radio as a medium. So it says, in the great days of radio, there were many programs presented in such a special, intimate way that they drew the listening audience into their stories completely. The mystery programs were particularly good at this, using voices that reached out to you and good sound effects. Heavy breathing up close to the microphone, echoing footsteps, a creaky door. You were held spellbound. The broadcasts were projected through symbols into your imagination, and you made the situation real. It was not just what you heard, it was what the sounds made you believe and feel. It was not the actor's emotions. It was not the application's features. It was not the application's construct that you were sensing anymore. They were your emotions. Is that not user experience?
Wow. That's heavy, man. Mind blowing.
And that's at the beginning. I was just like, wow, this is so great. And yep. I love Disney as well. And so I've grown up watching Disney too. And it's cool because, like I said earlier, it's not strictly user experience, I guess, but it's relatable. It's reality. I think everyone knows what a Disney character is and or have seen a movie and can appreciate the value and the level of detail and what's being built there. And I just couldn't believe, like, once you kind of fill in the blanks with words that, you know, you can interchange, like, this is user experience at its core.
Absolutely. I love that new insight. To be able to craft these characters and to be able to create a relationship and draw you in emotionally without actual people using, you know, objects. And there's so many things to take away from that. There's just the, you know, being willing to take risks and being willing to tell really great stories and that connect with people and draw people in. So that's definitely that sounds like user experience to me.
No, I absolutely love that book. And again, I'm a very non-traditional type person. It's not to say that I don't read, like, you know, traditional design books. I think they have a lot of value. But again, I think part of the revolution in design or user experience is to break away from the practice of the field of study and bring it back to, like, the users, the people that exist that we actually are serving, you know? Not to say that, like, you know, the studies and research that's being done is not relevant. In fact, it's so powerful. But I think sometimes it's easy to get stuck in, you know, the ideology of the field and the study, when in reality, as a user experience designer, like, your field of study is people.
Absolutely. So last question here in this area, what's your best advice for aspiring UX design superheroes?
I would just say, when you are faced with any bump in the road on your career, or if it's as specific as something you're working on, if you bump into something that you're stuck on, you skip it over if you need to. Don't let it disappear. And the reason I say that is because I would argue that one of the reasons why I've been very blessed and been very successful in being able to work with companies and other people to prototype really cool things is that there were things that I did not know how to do, but I didn't compromise on the experience because I didn't know how to do it. I just chose to buckle down and spend any time that's required to learn what I needed to learn to make it great. And it's definitely really easy with constraints and deadlines and stuff like that to do that. But I would argue that if you have to skip something over or do something differently, like, never table what your original idea was, because you can reveal new and great things through anything that you throw away. You know, the idea that there's a diamond in the rough, there's always something there. Maybe you don't have the time to work on it right then and there, but put it in your your knapsack, if you will, and like at any opportunity that you have, like revisit it.
Nice. That is great encouragement. I know our user defenders are going to take a lot away from that. So sorry that we went over, Josh. I promised you between 30 and 40 minutes. I apologize, but there was so much. There were so many great things to talk about, and you added so much great value to this conversation. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it too. And I know that as a listener, I am very excited to continue to be a part of User Defenders as a very enthusiastic subscriber, because I'm so eager to learn what all of the wonderful people you're going to bring on, what they have to say and what their perspectives are. And I'm just really, really excited for the potential that this has. And I hope that as silly or weird or like very strange, like my responses may have been or my perspectives may have been, I hope that there is something that I said or that I have done that will make people successful in what they choose to do.
Amen. And I tell you, you've said many things that that our listeners are going to really glean from. So really appreciate that. And as we close, why don't you tell our audience the best way to connect and to keep up with you?
Sure. Great question. So you can find me on a variety of mediums. However, if you are looking to contact me the best, I am on Twitter. My username is @JoshMTucker. I'm very responsive. I try to respond to every mention as quickly as possible. So you are welcome to chat with me there, ask me questions. If you live near me, like we can meet up. I live about 2 hours from the Bay Area. So if you're ever interested in like doing something there, I always have an excuse to escape and go to the Bay. If you're interested in prototyping and the things that I have done, you can go to my website, joshmtucker.com, or I have a Dribbble at joshmtucker2. And then also, if you're interested in Framer and you're looking for that cheerleader and someone that can help you be a Framer guru, and I'm by no means one, you're welcome to ask me anytime, and I'd be glad to help you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Josh. It was awesome having you on the show today. Appreciate you as a professional, but also as a friend. You got a great heart, and I just encourage you to continue. Keep up doing what you're doing, man. Fight on, my friend.
Thank you. And you too. I'm really glad that I have this chance to be a part of something really cool.
Thank you so much. Love that interview with Josh Tucker. Isn't his excitement for his work contagious? I wanted to also give a big kudos to Josh. By the time you're hearing this, he will have accepted a position with Google as an interaction designer. So way to go, Josh. Again, highly recommend checking out his work and keeping up with Josh, as he mentioned how to do that at the end of the show. If you enjoyed this episode, could you do me a huge favor and leave a rating and review on iTunes? It would help a great deal in getting the show in front of more defenders like you. Also, love to connect with you and hear your input and any suggestions you might have for future guests, perhaps, on Twitter @UserDefenders. Website is userdefenders.com. Thanks so much for listening. There should be a couple more interviews. There's one more interview, actually, at the time this launches with Craig Morrison, and that's a great one to check out as well. So until next week, fight on, my friends.